Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Sequestration is scheduled to go into effect on Friday, and if it does, what will the impact be here? We'll ask the Beacon's Rob Koenig a little later in this program. But first, not enough attention is apparently being paid to African-American children suffering from autism. A new study shows that they are diagnosed much later than white kids, perhaps as much as 2 years later. For a disorder that can be better handled with early intervention, that is not good news. We're talking with representatives of Life Skills, a United Way agency that helps people with developmental disabilities, including autism. It recently merged with Touchpoint Autism Services. Now, this issue will be discussed as part of a Black History Month program and Life Skills Community Education event tomorrow. I'll have more on that just a little bit later. With me in studio, all from Life Skills, are Melanie Mills, the Director of Family Services, and Shad, Family Navigator, and Christy Madison, Vice President of Marketing and Communications. Thanks so much, all of you, for being with us. Nice to have you.
Thank you for having us.
It's an important subject. Christy, let me begin with you. Kind of give us an overview, if you will, of the autism situation here in our area.
Sure. Well, autism is something that is very prevalent. Right now, 1 in 88 children are currently diagnosed with this disability. That's about 1 in 54 boys. And there are a number of different programs and services that are available to families in the area. And we actually at the Touchpoint Division of Life Skills, we serve over 3,000 families that are impacted by autism in 95 counties in the state of Missouri.
And what kind of services are available for those families?
Well, we have clinical services, so we actually do, you know, therapies and all different types of, you know, trainings that we can offer families. We do family navigation services, and I don't know, Ann, you want to hop in?
I do want to hop in. Don, I tell you what, families are so lost when they get this diagnosis. They have no idea where to start. So the family navigation, just to elaborate a little bit, is a service that's funded by the Lutheran Foundation here in St. Louis, where a family can call or make an appointment and come in and just talk about their concerns that they have with their child. We then come up with a plan for them. And literally, I itemize on a piece of paper a plan. Where do you go from here? What services that is that we can do for them to help get them started, to hook them up with funding sources to pay for these services. And one thing, too, that we're very big on, we've been doing for over 40 years, is parent training. And with this particular disability, I feel like this is probably the number one place to start. The more a parent understands autism and understands the difficulties their child's having with regards to communication, social, and emotional abilities, the better they're going to be able to parent that child. And our parent training, again, we've been working on this for 40 years, perfecting these methods, these strategies that are effective with kids with autism. We just feel like the more a parent knows, the sooner the chaos in their family is going to come down, and they'll be able to help their child. And I feel like we're very family-friendly with us. We have an intensive center-based program where they can bring their child and come for 2 weeks, like a normal work day, and work with their child and get the information they need. If not, we can go to them 2 hours a week for about 8 weeks and go to their home doing issue-specific parent training based on that family's needs. Mm-hmm. If a family says, you know what, I've just got a really busy schedule, I got numerous other children that I have to get to different places, we have a one-time Saturday class that we do once a month from like 9 to 4. So many families find that extremely beneficial.
Before getting to that point, though, Melanie, and I'll direct this at you, there has to be a diagnosis. And I get the impression from some of the things that I've been reading that that is far more difficult than some people might imagine.
Yes, it can be. I think part of the issue that we've been talking about this month is that African-American children are getting diagnosed later than Caucasians. So when you're getting diagnosed at 5, 6, 7 years old, that is past the early intervention time frame. And we really want to provide services as early as possible. That's the best time to teach a child new skills and to work on the things that they're struggling with.
Why is there this disparity?
We're not really sure. We've been communicating with Dr. Rogers at WashU, who they're doing some research on it, and some of the things that they are trying to look into is the fact that African-American families don't have as much access to healthcare. And so maybe they're just not getting referrals or not getting diagnosed early enough because they're not going to the doctor. But there also might be some stigma related to being diagnosed with what's considered a mental health issue.
That is something that obviously has to be corrected. What's being done to deal with that?
Well, we're trying at Life Skills, we're trying to go out into the medical field and educate pediatricians and neurologists as much as possible on the characteristics of autism, what to look for. We still have a lot of professionals that don't understand what there is, what they need to be looking for. There's not a blood test. There's not any sort of test you can do to get diagnosed. It's all based on observation, which makes it very difficult. So we try to go and educate the doctors as much as we can. And in addition, we have medical students that come and do tours and meet with Ann, actually, and learn about the diagnosis. And we've actually gotten some referrals from them once they've, you know, started their own practices, which has been really fantastic.
Well, Ann, what should parents be looking for?
They should be looking for concerns with their children's verbal communication, a lack of development of speech, or perhaps they develop speech and then around 18 months, age two, they stop using their speech. The other thing would be the lack of use of nonverbal skills, not using gestures, not using eye contact to communicate, not varying their facial expression throughout the day to kind of show how they're feeling. The other thing is what we see, what we call stereotypical type behaviors. Some people are familiar, like with hand flapping and toe walking when they're excited or when they're distressed. Parents also, especially of young children, talk about the fact that they don't seem to know how to play with toys the way another child their age would, and we'll see them line up toys, stack toys, turn a car upside down and just spin the wheels for extended periods of time. So oftentimes it's unusual behavior, particularly when that child is in a setting with their peers. Parents will notice that they're not initiating interaction with the other children. They're more standoffish, or perhaps they're playing next to them, but not with them.
This doesn't sound like something that could easily be confused with other disorders, although it is from time to time.
It is, but I've worked in this field for a long time, and I just really feel like these are also pretty distinct characteristics that fit this. There's a little bit of an overlap with a few other disorders, but for the most part, this is a pretty unique disorder.
What is the difference between treating someone early as opposed to 1 or 2 years later? Melanie, can you tell me how that up to two-year delay would impact treatment?
Well, research just shows that early intervention, really for any sort of treatment, no matter what your disability or disorder, is going to be the most beneficial. The sooner, you know, it's just like learning a new language. If you start teaching somebody that's 3 or 4 how to speak Spanish, they're going to learn it a lot easier than if you and I started taking a Spanish class now. It's just the way our brains work. The elasticity in our brains allows for that that learning at that early age. So the longer you wait, the harder it is. It's not that you can't make a difference later in life. It's not that you can't make progress. You can. It's just might be a little bit slower.
One of the best analogies that I've heard is the concrete theory. And if you think about it, when you pour concrete, it's wet and you can still, you know, move it and adjust it and work with it until it sets in. But once it's set in, you have to jackhammer it to change it. And that's very similar to the mind when you're dealing with kids with autism. Sooner equals better.
How far can you take a young person in terms of treatment to, I hate to use this word, but it's the only one I can think of, to a degree of normalcy, if you will? How far can you take them?
It really depends on the child. And I hate that answer, but it's really the only answer you have. The saying we have with people with autism is, if you've met one person with autism, you've met one person with autism. The disorder itself is a spectrum, so everybody is different. The characteristics manifest themselves differently in everybody. So there are some kids that are going to do wonderfully. They're going to graduate from high school, go to college, drive a car, get married, have a job, and be great contributing members to the community. But then there's going to be other kids that are going to need some supports to some degree for the rest of their lives.
How far have we progressed, Anne, in dealing with these young people and helping them?
Oh, gosh, I've been doing this for about 21 years. I think we progress quite a bit, just even in research, which I think is very exciting to try to determine possibly what are some of the causes. When I think 21 years ago, there were like four areas of research. Now there's multiple areas. I can't even count how many different areas we're looking at. And the same goes for treatments. I just feel like we've added so many additional treatments over the years. So parents really have a variety of treatments now that they can choose from and find which one their child seems to benefit most from.
I saw something on television the other night, and it was basically dealing with ADHD. And that was something called, I have to look at my notes, the Brain Balance Program. Does that ring a bell with any of you? Have you heard about that?
No.
What they apparently do, they put the hemispheres of the brain in balance somehow, and they seem to indicate that that has had some impact. But you're not aware of it.
They might be doing some research on that type of treatment for people with autism as well, but that's not the field that we're in. We deal more with behavioral strategies, so we try to stay up on the research as much as we can, but I have not heard of that one.
Do we have any new information with regard to cause?
No, they're doing a lot of really fantastic research, even here in St. Louis, which is great. So they're looking at genetics, obviously. If you have a sibling or a parent that has an autism diagnosis, the next child is much more likely to be diagnosed themselves. So they're looking at that component. But cause, they still don't know yet.
What other cultural components might there be? We've talked about the young African-Americans who have this delay in diagnosis. Are there other cultural elements here?
You know, Don, we see the prevalence to be the same across all ethnic backgrounds and all socioeconomic levels. So really, it's pretty much the same across the board.
Yeah. But just the delay in the diagnosis age is the main difference in the African-American population that we've been seeing. And there are some cultural differences. Melanie spoke a little while ago about just maybe not having as much access to health care, and not to stereotype, but sometimes in certain areas of the African-American population, they may not have a regular pediatrician. When someone gets sick, they may go to the ER. Or, oftentimes there's not a collaborative family unit. Sometimes there may just be one parent in the household and may just be trying to deal with it. So there are certain cultural issues that do make a difference.
How about Hispanics or Asians? Do they fall into any
similar category? Yes, actually, research shows Hispanics are diagnosed even later and less often than the African American community. And I, would be making an assumption, but I would assume it's for many of the same reasons.
All right, I have to take a break. We'll do that now. We're talking about autism, and basically, we're focusing our discussion today on the fact that African American youngsters are diagnosed so much later than Caucasian counterparts, sometimes as many as 2 years later. And this is a problem because early intervention is a key. My guest in studio, Melanie Mills, Director of Family Services for Life Skills, and Shad, Family Navigator for Life Skills, and Christy Madison, Vice President of Marketing and Communications for that same organization. We'll be back to continue our conversation, and we would like to bring you into it. You can do so by giving us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. We'll take a tweet at STL On Air, and you can also reach us through Facebook. We'll be back in just a moment. This is St. Louis On the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back as we continue our conversation on autism. My guests in studio are Christy Madison, Vice President of Marketing and Communications for Life Skills. Other guests from that same organization are Melanie Mills, Director of Family Services, and Ann Shad, Family Navigator for Life Skills. You'd mentioned, Christy, off the air, something that we certainly have to address, and that is the cost component and what it costs us to be dealing with this.
Right. Well, for every undiagnosed case of autism, if someone goes undiagnosed across the lifespan, the cost to society is roughly $3.5 million. So, and then there's just so many different reasons that children really need to be diagnosed early. So sooner equals better, not just for the family and for that child, but really for society at large. We need to get this under control.
Isn't the percentage of kids diagnosed with autism increasing? And hasn't it been over the years?
It has. Yeah. It has increased roughly 600% in the last decade.
Yeah. And why are boys more prone to this than girls? Do we know?
We don't know. We really don't know. It's 4 to 1 more prevalent in boys than in girls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're not sure, but again, they're doing research on that as well, trying to figure out what kind of what is it with girls that can kind of push that away a little bit and protect themselves. So they're looking at that.
And the number is currently 1 in 54 boys diagnosed.
1 in 54. And that has risen sharply, has it not? I guess it's risen because it used to be 1 in 110 or something like that.
That was about 3 years ago, mm-hmm. 1 in 110.
Well, what is that telling us?
That it's on the rise. Mm-hmm. And it's actually one of the reasons why our two organizations needed to merge. This was the impetus for us because we realized that these children that we've been serving in our autism services are going to become adults and are going to need adult services in the community as they continue to live. So that was the impetus for the reason for the merger.
Those who are adults and autistic, can they function fairly well in today's society, Millie?
They can. Again, everybody's going to be different. Yeah. So some of them are going to need more supports than others. We have residential programs, community living programs at Life Skills that have people that, live in homes out in, the community. There's actually two homes in my subdivision, and they live there with 24-hour support. But then we have other people that just have a neighbor that comes in and checks on them every once in a while to make mm-hmm. sure things are going smoothly. So the level of support that they might receive is vastly different. And the same goes with having jobs, too. Mm-hmm. So we have some people that get a lot of support and others just check in, or we just help them find a job.
And what is the worst case scenario? I mean, the worst case of autism, what does that entail?
I would say that's probably a child that doesn't have any verbal skills, would appear to be pretty aloof, pretty disconnected from what's going on around them. Also, 80% of this population, Don, have sensory issues. They're oversensitive or they're undersensitive to things in the environment, whether it's lights, whether it's sounds, whether it's smells, the sense of touch. And that is very interfering in their daily life when sounds that you and I maybe don't even hardly mm-hmm. notice, they're covering their ears and find it to actually be painful. So that probably would be – Melanie, would you add anything to that?
Right. I think because of some of the things that Anne brought up, that also can lead to a lot of behaviors. Mm-hmm. So a large percentage of people on the autism spectrum have either physically aggressive behaviors towards others or property destruction or self-interest behaviors. And it boils down to the fact that they just can't communicate their wants and needs and how they're feeling.
So difficult for a parent to have to deal with that.
It is. Oh. It's devastating, Don. That's why the parent training really is helpful.
Oh, I can see that. Let's take some calls. We'll begin with Robin calling from Glen Carbon. Robin, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Hey, Don. How are you?
Great.
Thanks for taking my call. I have a number of things. I was really excited to hear this show because I just came out of the Autism Center in Maryville, Illinois. My son has recently been diagnosed with Asperger's, probably last November, and I'm just really exploring the community resources that are available to me. You know, you sort of feel like you're all alone until you realize there's lots of great resources out there, social groups and support groups for parents and things like that. So thank you for, both of you guys for what you have been doing in terms of helping the community.
Well, thank you for the call. Did you have a question or anything that you'd like to ask?
I do, actually. The issue is I wanted to talk about Brain Balance just for a second because my daughter did Brain Balance, and it's a really great multidimensional program, and it deals with behavioral stuff, but it also deals with the cognitive things. So my question for you is how can we get more support group activity in the Metro East? We don't have a lot of that kind of support over here for the kids. There's lots of stuff in the St. Louis area, but Metro East, we get sort of stuck.
Thanks for the call, Robin. Who'd like to take that?
Well, I think really things unfortunately boil down to funding. We have a lot of fantastic funding in the St. Louis area that we're able to do, like she was saying, some social groups for. We have teens, social groups for teens and young adults on the spectrum and some group programs for younger children at our facility. So we're able to go out in the community and take them out and work on some social skills and life skills and go to some cool places like the Blue Man Group at the Fox and do some really neat activities. And we have parent support groups and does some amazing sibling support groups as well. Unfortunately, getting to the Metro East side can, she's correct, it can be difficult to get over there.
We do actually collaborate with a number of different agencies, and there is an agency over there called the Illinois Center for Autism, and we have collaborated with them annually on an event, and this year it's going to be held at Busch Stadium on May the 19th. It's called the Walk, Run, and Roll, and it's for people with developmental disabilities, including autism, and they will be a part of that. So I would recommend Illinois Center for Autism as a space in the Metro East that you can look into.
Melanie, you mentioned funding. Where does the funding for you guys come from?
We get a lot of our funding for, I guess, particularly for the services that I'm in charge of, from state funding, such as taxes that you pay if you live in St. Louis City or if you live in St. Louis County. So a lot of the programs that we run receive funding from that.
A United Way agency.
We are a United Way agency, so we get funding from United Way as well.
I raise that question because funding of anything these days is a big problem, from the federal government right on down to
right.
the local governments.
There is a gap, and we do fundraise to try to fill that gap, especially for the parent training program. Key fundraising is going on a regular basis to try to help families get into that program, because that is where we have found the most beneficial results come.
So this economy is hurting you as it is everybody else. Let's take another call. Taylor joins us from St. Louis County. Go ahead, Taylor.
Good morning, ladies. Good morning, John. How are you?
Good morning.
Thank you for taking the call. I'm enjoying the conversation so much, and I've dealt with autism throughout my family my whole life. And the one thing that I would like to say, I would like to pose a question, but first, I heard a young lady say, and I don't want her to be offended when she said about a stereotype as far as African Americans and the inadequacy of medical treatment. There's no reason to be embarrassed about that. I am a Black American male, and that is the truth. With that, my question is, would either one of the ladies see or agree maybe there is a difference with the diagnosis and the rush to diagnose for ADD or ADHD and to treat that with a pill, than to take a further look into autism and the causes therefore?
Yeah,
Melanie?
I think because of the spectrum that we talked about before, there are a lot of people that, you can tell that something's going on, that they're having some issues and some concerns, but they might be higher functioning and they have, lack of attention and the inability to stay interested in something for long periods of time. And it can look like ADHD. So a lot of the kids that we've worked with have been misdiagnosed. They get the ADHD diagnosis, they get put on Ritalin or another medication, and it just doesn't work for them. So that has definitely happened before, and it might take a little bit longer to figure out that they should have gotten the Asperger's diagnosis instead.
And oftentimes we'll see that it can be a dual diagnosis, both
Correct.
Autism and ADHD.
One of the callers, I think it was, mentioned siblings. And Anne, I'll turn to you with regard to this. This is another part of the situation, is it not, where you have one child with autism and a sibling who does not?
Oh, absolutely. And the autism diagnosis, Don, affects everyone in the family, obviously the parents, and I've been emphasizing the parent training. But I tell you what the siblings do too, and oftentimes I've been doing the sibling support groups for about 17 years now, and they continue to grow in numbers also. But oftentimes they feel left out. They feel like that sibling gets most of mom and dad's attention and different therapists coming in and out, and they kind of feel pushed aside and feel somewhat unnoticed. So part of my job is to help the siblings with education, truly understanding what is autism, what is Asperger's syndrome, and then teaching them ways to connect and to communicate and improve their relationship with their sibling, but to better understand their sibling and how they process information differently and why they respond differently.
The little exposure that I've had to this situation, what I have seen is the siblings are among the best of therapies of all for these people.
Very true.
They are. Individuals with autism typically are visual learners. So to have somebody modeling the appropriate behavior, oftentimes what we'll tell families or we can tell the children is, we're going to go to church on Sunday. do what your sister's doing. If she's kneeling, you need to kneel. If she's singing, you need to sing. So absolutely. And also the sibling wanting to interact with the child with autism and really trying to get them to respond and having that back and forth, that social interaction. Yeah, oh, absolutely. They're the best therapist that the sibling will have.
Medications, we've mentioned Ritalin, and that's gotten a lot of attention. How far have we advanced in recent years with regard to medication?
There's no medication. There's no magic pill for autism. Oftentimes, if a child is taking medication, they're taking it to treat a symptom such as the ADD, ADHD, or several children, numerous children with autism also may have a seizure disorder. So, of course, they're going to be on seizure medication. Oftentimes, when they get older, just having the social difficulties, not reading social cues in the environment, you'll see their anxiety really go up when they're out in the community. So sometimes they'll be on medications for anxiety, but there is no medication for autism or Asperger's.
I'm surprised, as our time winds down, I'm surprised we haven't had a question yet about vaccinations because it always comes up. I hesitate to bring it up. Melanie, I'll throw this your way. We've talked about autism a lot on this program, and the notion that vaccinations play any role in autism has been totally dispelled by everyone we've talked to. I only raise that issue so we can dispel it again if we should we?
Yes. Research shows that there is no correlation. It's been, like you said, dispelled by everybody. So it's just not something that we get into at Life Skills. Like I mentioned before, we really target the behavioral strategies and not so much the cause. So, you know, parents are going to formulate their own opinion, and they're welcome to that. We try to kind of push them towards, here's some research for you to look at, but you know, you have to make your own decision.
Sure. Our time is just about up, and Christy, I'll come back to you because you're having an event tomorrow, and it's going to be right here in this building.
Right.
Happy to say, in our community room. Tell folks who can come, who should come, and what's going on.
Well, we are just so thrilled to be offering this event to the community. It is going to be a community education panel discussing autism in the African American community. The public is welcome to attend. It's going to be in the community room right here at your building here in Grand Center. And we're really going to take a dive in. We've got a couple of doctors, one of the doctors from WashU who's doing an incredible amount of research. We've got another doctor from Grace Hill who's going to be here. We have our vice president of autism services from Touchpoint. And we also have a parent who has a son, a four-year-old son, who's on the spectrum, and she is African-American. And then we also have Deborah Fiasco for coming from the Department of Mental Health, and she can talk about all the different resources available to the African-American community
and
in St. Louis.
That's happening between 6 and 8 p.m. tomorrow at UMSL right. Grand Center Community Room right here, 3651 Olive. Very, very quickly, Anne, I'll come back to you and then to Melanie. What do you see as the biggest challenge ahead?
Funding, probably. Mm-hmm. I just feel like some of our services individuals get into right away. Other ones, we have lengthy wait lists, but sometimes funding, it can be a barrier. And the other thing I guess I would say, especially with the African-American community, is education and educating those pediatricians and educating those parents to pick up on the signs and symptoms early.
That's what we're here for.
That's right.
Okay. And Melanie, final thought?
Right. I would piggyback on that. I would say getting access to services for families that struggle with that. That's what we want to do. We want to try to reach as many people as we can. And so that's our goal.
Melanie Mills and Christy Madison, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank
Ann Shedd, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Continue the good work.
Thank you.
Certainly a lot of work needs to be done. Thank you so much for being with us.
If anyone has any further need for details about the event tomorrow or anything else, they can go to lifeskills-mo.org.
I'm sure we'll link to that on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Ladies, thank you so much
for being with us.
And next, the sequester. It's still on for Friday. We'll talk about the impact here, if it's implemented, with the Beacon's Rob Koenig. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.